Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hello, listeners. My name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Tim Ash, Chief Clinical Officer at WellSky, about the issue of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services cutting rates for Medicare home health. Tim addressed the solutions that are either underway or those that can potentially preserve access to these services. Well, hello, Tim. How are you today?
Good, Brianna. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for your time. So just to start things off, can you tell our listeners just about your role and organization at WellSky?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have the distinct privilege of being the Chief Clinical Officer at WellSky. And many of you might know WellSky is one of the most innovative and broad-reaching technology, service, and analytics companies in healthcare today. We have the privilege of serving both the acute side of the healthcare industry, as well as the post-acute. We have assets in care coordination, CarePort being one of the largest and most recent acquisitions that we've made. The whole premise at WellSky is really creating a network of providers that are connected and able to provide intelligent care in a world that frankly really requires that level of sophistication and connectedness to the ecosystem between providers and with payers. So as the Chief Clinical Officer, I have the privilege of just adding hopefully a little bit of evidence-based and best practice clinical interventions to the work that we're doing across the platform.
Wonderful, thank you. Now onto the topic of home health. Are you able to give me a quick cliff note or maybe some background on why these centers for Medicaid, centers for Medicare and Medicaid services, why they're cutting rates for Medicare home health, and maybe what's the reason behind only cutting that $125 million instead of the estimated $810?
Yeah, so the background is as the law was created for PDGM in home health a few years ago, there was a stipulation in that law for future changes to be budget neutral. And so the budget neutrality and the calculations going from the PPS world to the PDGM world, these are just two payment mechanisms, methodologies that have changed in home health, required that transition to be budget neutral. And so that's the premise that CMS is using. That's the law that CMS is using as the basis for these changes. Now, not to go too far and too deep into actual methodology and the calculations, because I frankly am not an expert in that arena. But what industry advocates and advocates in general have questioned is the validity of the methodology that's calculating budget neutrality in this instance. So the premise being budget neutrality, the question marks around how those calculations were conducted by CMS have led to, I think, mathematical concern around those, what were proposed and now have been instituted changes for fiscal year or calendar year 2023. The positive side of this is that the proposed, as you just indicated, the proposed cuts were significantly higher than what was actually written into the final rule for the coming year. The concern there, of course, is that any cut to home health, certified home health, at a time when labor, travel, expense, and inflationary impacts on running an organization and are at an all-time high, any cuts to the benefit could potentially be real destructive to the industry at large and certainly to providers specifically. So let me stop there. I could go on and on, but I'm sure you have some questions that you want to weave in, and we can get into a conversation about what this all means.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, so my follow-up from there was so how can healthcare organizations continue to preserve access to home health services to meet the increased consumer demand for care and even decrease costs?
Yeah, no, I think that's really the crux of this, right? So, as we think about the expansion of the vulnerable populations in our country that really need this kind of home-based, specifically home health care, at a time when that demand is growing and will continue to grow for decades, and we have a real pressure on the supply of qualified both professional as well as paraprofessional caregivers, this is a really vulnerable time for the industry. A. B, these kinds of cuts will require or will really force leadership teams and management teams in home health to make difficult decisions on where they invest, if they invest in their infrastructure, in technology, in assuring that they're caregiver workforce has competitive wages, that they have competitive benefits. So it really does put a tremendous amount of pressure on providers to make those tough decisions around investments. And to your question pointedly, access to care requires us to bring a level of innovation. If we don't have the appropriate level and the appropriate supply of individuals to provide care to this growing demand of patients that need this home-based care, then innovation is something that we really have to consider. We don't have appropriate fees and access to capital with specifically Medicare and Medicaid home health rates, then that comes into question. Organizations may not be able to make those investments in their infrastructure and in their talent. In their teammates and caregivers to appropriately create the innovation, or basically to continue to provide care to the same level of patients they have in the past. So it's a huge concern to us at WellSky, and of course, huge concern to the industry at large.
Of course, yeah, thank you. Now, why do future cuts need to be delayed to avoid the vicious cycle of high rates of referral rejections for home health care?
Yeah, that's a really, Brianna, that's a really good question. I think again, the future cuts that loom large to providers and to the home health industry specifically, we really need to continue to have the kind of advocacy efforts, both grassroots and formal efforts that we saw over the last, 6 to 8 months from the industry and from providers. Ultimately, it just makes good logical sense to have home health flourish. And ultimately, those things just make a lot of sense as we think about meeting that growing demand and enabling the access to, frankly, multiple levels of care that can be delivered through home health, in a patient's home, whatever and however they define home in their particular instance. So, given all of that, I think the advocacy effort has to be really working with CMS and the legislature to assure that future cuts are managed, and ultimately they don't make the same impact or any impact on the ability to provide safe, high quality home-based care.
Great, thank you. Now, can you discuss how legislations like the Preserving Access to Home Health Act, which delays these costs until 2026, how does that act allow for the opportunity to develop a payment model that preserves access to home health care and decrease costs?
Yeah, again, I think the advocacy in our industry, led by, national organizations such as NAHC and state organizations, both formal and informal, are so key to preserving the industry and really allowing for law, legislature, et cetera, to be consistent with what we all know is a great approach to expanding quality and improving the cost efficiency of healthcare in the United States. So that particular example, that NAC has led and that many folks on the Hill have gotten behind is an example of the kind of work that we need to continue to have. Ultimately, what we would like to see again is payment reform, rate adjustments that are investing in the quality of care, investing in the infrastructure, the technology, the analytics, the ability for providers to institute some of the technology services, solutions, clinical support applications, analytics, better intervention techniques that require investments on a provider by provider level. If we don't have that kind of advocacy and we don't push on some of these acts, then we simply run the risk of shrinking the industry and reducing access. So again, a high degree of emphasis on continued advocacy, specific programs, and legislative actions that I think the examples that we've seen over the last 6 months really highlight is critical to our path forward.
Thank you. Now I have two more questions that may be a little bit more repetitive. But if you can you explain why our healthcare system should prepare to provide hospital at-home care
Yeah.
ahead of the estimated 800, or I'm sorry, 80 million people who will become senior citizens in the next 20 years? And secondly, why is this model of care a solution with the potential for decreased hospitalizations and costs?
Yeah, no, it's a great, and I think the pandemic really put a spotlight on some of the early pilots and programs. Not just hospital at home, but specifically that was one that really came to bear in many markets and many health system, regional health systems and national health systems as a solution to hospital bed crunches. The pandemic obviously had some very unique and critical metrics that came along with it. But I think what we're seeing is that multiple levels of care can be provided safely and cost efficiently at home. So hospital at home, skilled nursing care at home, hybrid programs that may combine some of the severity levels and levels of service between what have traditionally been facility-based care can be very effectively and cost efficiently provided at home. And I think that level of innovation is what we're going to see play out in the near term as we think about how do we really create a system that is efficient, both from a cost point of view, but also from an operational and clinical delivery point of view, creating these programs at scale that we can bring to patients and to communities across the country is exciting. But again, the investments that we need to make there require capital. And I think I don't mean to keep coming back to that central theme, but when we have cuts to the industry, it prevents providers potentially from creating those innovative programs and investing in technology and the platforms that allow us to, monitor, measure, and deliver really highly technical and sophisticated care to individuals in their home.
Wonderful, thank you. And Tim, that's all I had for you, but if there's anything you'd like to add on the topic that maybe I didn't bring up or didn't address?
No, it's great, Brianna. I really appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the conversation. It's interesting, right? We're talking about a time when rate cuts were implemented. Now they were not as drastic as what they might have been, so that's the positive side. The flip side of that is that we have these looming potential cuts that still quite honestly might come to bear on the industry. The importance and the I think critical nature of home health care at a time when demand is growing so rapidly and when the rational side of all of us know that patients want to receive this level of care at home and can do so in a very high quality, cost efficient way, it just doesn't match, right? So again, providers and industry associations and the advocates therein are going to continue to push hard to make sure that future law and future decisions by CMS and the legislature are in line with that rationality that home health can and should be a huge part of the solution to cost effectiveness and quality in the national healthcare arena here. So thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, Tim. Thank you. You not only educated me and gave me more insights from yourself, but our listeners as well. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.